Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
A magical opportunity has come to the JDHS Auditorium.
The theater department is performing the musical that they will perform at the International Fringe Festival in Scotland.
Come support these award-winning JDHS students as they perform Pippin,
a story about a troupe of actors who lure a man into a world full of illusions as he searches for fulfillment in
splendor, power,
and glory. May 3rd, 10th, and 11th at 7 p.m.
May 11th at 2 p.m.
Tickets available at Heartside Books
and JAHC.org.
Tune in to Friends and Neighbors tonight on KRNN when Alaska singer and songwriter Marion Call will become DJ Marion as she joins us on Friends and Neighbors to share music from her favorite artists, some Alaskan, some totally obscure, and some very popular. That's Marion Call, the DJ, on Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. tonight on KRNN at 102.7, or find us streaming on the internet at ktoo.org.
You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. I'm your host, Danny Peterson. Today we'll talk to Randy Hurt about this Saturday's litter-free cleanup day. Seattle architect Olson Kundig will talk about his presentation at tonight's Alaska Design Forum at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. We'll get a preview of Thursday's jazz and classic concert, Brahms Away, with members of the Jasper String Quartet. Mark Piotrowski will give us details about this Saturday's letter carrier food drive, and we'll find out more information about this Saturday's March of Dimes, so stay tuned. That Writer's Almanac, music, and more. Up next is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Alaska Native man who claims he's wrongly imprisoned for murder has won delayed release. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Marvin Roberts is one of four men serving long prison sentences for a 1997 beating death of a teenager in downtown Fairbanks. They were convicted without physical evidence based on recanted confessions and a long-distance eyewitness. The men, three of whom are Alaska Native, all claim innocence. Free the Fairbanks 4 advocate April Monroe Frick says Roberts' parole officer recommended his immediate release, but the parole board stopped short of granting the full request.
The parole board did not follow her recommendation. They did opt to release him on parole, but not for another 2 years.
Monroe Frick says the ruling is mixed news for Roberts. She says it's unusual for a convict who proclaims innocence to be recommended for and get parole, but 2 years is a long time.
What Marvin said when we were talking was that on a bad day, that one day feels like an eternity, you know, to be in prison for something that you didn't do.
Monroe Frick says the main focus of the Free the Fairbanks 4 cause is an exoneration case being worked on by the Alaska Innocence Project. Many interior Alaska Natives claim racial prejudice played a role in the Fairbanks 4 convictions, alleging the young men were questioned while still under the effect of heavy drinking and coerced into making untrue statements. Another one of the Fairbanks Four recently won a chance to argue his attorney failed to get key criminal justice experts into court. For National Native News in Fairbanks, Alaska, I'm Dan Bross.
The president of Haskell Indian Nations University says he plans to resign to take another position located in Oklahoma. As KGOU's Kirk Gortney reports, his new job is not known at this time.
In a memo to students, faculty, and staff, Chris Redmond said the decision to leave Haskell was difficult, but would move him closer to his family. Redmond was offered a new position in Oklahoma, but would not reveal where he will be working. But he added that he's been given a, quote, great opportunity to continue to serve Indian country in a new capacity, end quote. Haskell spokesman Stephen Prue says Redmond and other officials would not comment beyond the memo out of a desire not to draw attention away from Friday's commencement ceremonies. Redmond says more information will be released following commencement. He was named president of the school in Lawrence, Kansas in 2011 after serving as acting president. Redmond's tenure came after questions from Washington over the school's leadership. Haskell Indian Nations University's website says the school has an annual enrollment of more than 1,000 students each semester. representing federally recognized tribes from across the nation. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Norman, Oklahoma.
Tribal judges, attorneys, and court staff are learning about how to deal with issues involving personal property that can be used as collateral. The Bureau of Indian Affairs and other federal agencies are hosting a two-day workshop in Bloomington, Minnesota, which begins today. The training is designed to provide information on issues that arise in secured transaction litigation. This is the second of three such trainings being held by the BIA. It was developed by federal agencies and Federal Reserve banks. The last session is in the works for December. Indigenous artists are being recognized this week at the 14th Annual Native American Music Awards. A number of musicians in a variety of genres are expected to perform. The ceremony includes a tribute and Hall of Fame induction for the late Russell Means and a Living Legends Award for Nelly Furtado. Nominees are competing in categories like Artist of the Year and Best Powwow Recording. The event takes place Friday at the Seneca Niagara Hotel and Casino in New York. During this month in 2012, the Bureau of Indian Affairs honored the first Native American alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosive investigator killed in the line of duty. The name of William Lewis Pappin was unveiled on the Indian Country Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Artesia, New Mexico. Pappin from the Kaw Nation was one of three Native ATF investigators during the Prohibition and Post-Prohibition era. He was killed in 1935 during late-night inspections at a club in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And we're back on a Juneau afternoon. I'm your host today, Danny. You're listening to KTOO FM in Juneau. I'm here with my first guest, Randy Hurt. He is a board member of Litter Free, an organization here in Juneau, and they are having a cleanup day this upcoming Saturday. And hi, Randy. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Danny, for letting us on.
No problem. So could you tell us a little bit more about this event and how can people get involved?
Well, it's an annual event. A lot of folks around the town have seen it every year about this time. Usually we have it the Saturday before Mother's Day. We have bag sites around town. People can pick up bags early Saturday morning. Most folks get going pretty early in the morning and usually try to have everything done by noon. After that, we have trucks that have volunteered around town. A lot of our contractors are picking up garbage, throwing it in the truck, taking it out the landfill for us. So we basically, this has been going on for many, many years, but this is our big push in the spring to really clean up the town.
It's like a spring cleaning event for the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the places that people can go to pick up the bags and if there's any other equipment like that?
Yeah, there's usually our bag sites will have bags for just normal trash that you pick up, and then we have separate bags that are usually green for recyclables, and the contractors separate those out, and then Friends of Recycling are out the landfill separating that out and trying to recycle what they can. We've got bag sites really all over town. We'd say from Douglas Fire Hall all the way out to UAS Bookstore, but you can find every year somebody usually at Jensen's and Western Auto. We'll see them over at Foodland, Duck Creek Market, Super Bear. Those are our normal bag sites, but you'll see a big yellow banner by the storefront, and there you can pick up your bags. Usually we have also some disposable gloves if you want to do that. And just, I guess, the main thing is it's a public cleanup, not really a time to clean out your garage and toss it out on this curbside, but really a public area. So we've got people that are every year hitting their favorite trailheads, the streets in front of their house, and really trying to just get the whole town picked up.
Oh, it sounds like a great effort. Why did you want to get involved in this organization?
Well, it was many years ago. A lot of the board members have been on the board for many, many years. And I think a lot of us, you know, came up to Alaska to see a pristine, beautiful place. And after a few years of maybe going down a trailhead and seeing a mess, we usually, you know, would help pick up. But we felt like sometimes we needed a more organized effort. So many years, you know, we're talking 30 years ago, I think it was probably Channel Landfill back then, Shorty Tonsgaard, had been seeing these messes and really decided to get a few folks together, form a nonprofit, and really do a consorted effort at getting out and picking up the garbage. And he was taking it free of charge out there, letting them dump it. Now we've got waste management doing the same thing for us. So all the tons and tons of garbage we've picked up, waste management has accepted that without any fee or charge. So it's been a great community-wide effort. All of our funding generally comes from private sources around town. So we've got a lot of individuals that maybe they can't get out, but their business, they make a donation. Not only the cleanup day, but also throughout the year, we have a thing called the Youth Litter Patrol. And I think that was started by ALPAR, which is an Anchorage kind of based organization for for litter pickup and recycling. So they've helped us along with bags and whatnot. So you'll see the yellow bags around on the sides of the road on Saturday.
I was wondering about that, about the bag pickup. So there's going to be... Is it people going around in trucks picking up the bags after people have cleaned?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And
yeah.
How will people, how just the identifying nature of the bag, you just set it someplace where it's visible?
Yeah, that's the main thing.
Okay.
I mean, if you live down a little cul-de-sac, it may be a couple of days before we remember to get somebody by there. We have organizations that kind of help us pick up stray bags after the cleanup. But if you bring it out to a major thoroughfare, or, you know, to one of the major roads and set it on the side. Try to get it out there by noon because we have to get it all to the dump by 4 o'clock, so they don't want to keep going after it all throughout the day. So most people have their bags, you know, tied up and put in a nice pile and ready to be picked up.
Kind of a morning time activity.
It really is. It really is, Danny. I mean, we really... we'd like it to go further. Sometimes people want to clean up in the afternoon, and as long as they, you know, take their own garbage in, put it in their own waste paper, you know, own garbage can, it's fine. But as far as stacking alongside the road, you really want to get it done by noon. So we see usually we start giving out bags by 8 o'clock, and usually by 10, 11, most of the bags and gloves have been picked up. People are already out there picking up the roadsides.
Uh-huh. And is there going to be a picnic this year at Duck Creek Market, too, for the volunteers?
Yeah, same thing. We've done that several years now with the Juneau Watershed Partnership, which is, you know, kind of an organization that's really taken it on task to keep our streams clean. So they'll have folks alongside of the streams trying to dig out bicycles and whatever else they find back there. They always find a nice collection of stuff. But that's going to be held at Duck Creek Market, which they've been really nice every year, allowing us to have a little picnic over there. And so if you're done cleaning up and you want to come over and say hi, come on over and have a hot dog or a hamburger. And we have a little till about 1 o'clock, from about noon on. Come over and kind of socialize with other people with similar views on cleaning up. Obviously, we're hoping for a nice day like we have today.
Well, that sounds like a really great time. Sounds like fun. So people can go out and volunteer and pick up trash and then all have a picnic together. And some of those places listed here, Foodland IGA, Douglas Library, Fire Hall, Western Auto, Duck Creek Market, Super Bear, Lyle's Home Furnishings, and the UAS bookstore are all places you can pick up the trash bags.
Exactly. And if you have any questions, we do have a website that's litterfree.org.
Oh, okay.
When you pull up litterfree, you do find a lot of sites for, I think, cat litter, but I mean, it's litterfree.org.
Hard to get that Google criteria right sometimes.
So
that's
good for
people to know, too.
You can find, we're dedicating again to Bob Garrison, who passed on a couple of years ago. He was lived into his 80s, but he really was one of those guys on his own, you know, a one-man cleaning machine for probably 50 years. He was hit every trail probably in town many, many times all the way through his 80s, but he would always have his pickup truck, and he would pull up beside a dump he'd find out the road, and he on his own would just start filling his pickup truck up and taking it in. And when he found out there was actually an organization, he started coming on a regular basis and telling us about dumps and ideas that we could do to keep Juno a little cleaner.
Well, that's fantastic, and now it's all coming together on Saturday for the litter-free cleanup day. Randy, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking to
Thanks,
me about
Danny.
This.
Sunny day, I'm on my way. I'm headed out the door. My mom calls from the stairs. Pull it right there. Who left this stuff on the floor? I said, I don't know, Mom. I gotta go. I hope you understand. She says, no, I don't. No, you won't. You better listen to me, young man. Who made this mess? Don't tell me it got here by itself. Who made Don't tell me it was left by somebody else. She said, you're the one who had your fun fooling around with this stuff. The one who plays, that's the one who pays, and I'm not cleaning it up. Well, she always knows if I pick up my clothes. She knows if I make my bed. How she sees, it's a mystery to me. She must have eyes in the back of her head. Well, I try to be fly, I try to get by, but there's no getting away. 'Cause if I leave the scene and it's not clean, I'm gonna hear my mother say, who made this mess? Don't tell me it got here by itself. Who made this mess? Don't tell me it was left by somebody else. You're the one who had your fun fooling around with this stuff. The one who plays, that's the one who pays, and I'm not cleaning it up. Everybody, let's make a mess.
Until it's all cleaned up.
And we're back on a Juno afternoon, and I'm here with my next guests. They are Tom Kundig and Evelyn Russo. And Tom is an architect from Seattle. He's giving a talk tonight. Evelyn is with Northwind Architect, and she's with the Alaska Design Forum. And thank you both for coming on today.
Thank you.
And what will your talk tonight be about?
Oh, for the most part, I'm going to be focusing on work I've been doing in the last 15 years. And largely, the talk will be about the influences. It'll start with some of the influences that influenced the work to date. And a lot of those influences came from my young adulthood. And I'll talk a little bit about that and how it integrates into the work I've been doing in the last few years.
What are some of those influences, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, I grew up in eastern Washington, northern Idaho, so obviously the landscape is a big deal in my work. The architecture, some people will observe that the architecture has almost more to do with the landscape than it does with the architecture and how it kind of unfolds. And I think the landscape, just like your Alaskan landscape, I mean, we all recognize when you're in a landscape that's this big and this powerful and this beautiful that you can't imagine designing anything more beautiful than what's out there. So how do you make a building that actually sort of unfolds into that out there in a way? And that's basically what I've been trying to do with all my projects. And a landscape doesn't necessarily have to mean that it's a natural landscape. It can also be a cultural landscape like a city.
Interesting. So how does your work kind of unfold, as you say, in the natural environment surrounding the building?
Well, you should come to the lecture, and then we can sort of go through some of those some of those devices and some of those strategies that I use. And
sure.
And literally, some parts of these buildings sort of open to that landscape, whether it's, again, in a cultural landscape like a city or a larger landscape like a natural landscape you have up here. But some of these projects actually move relatively large parts of the building to literally open to that landscape.
Wow, that sounds very, very fascinating. And I was just wondering about the format of the lecture. Is it just going to be a lecture, or is there going to be an open Q&A at the end of the lecture?
Actually, for those of you who have been to our lectures before, you know that they're usually about an hour lecture or so, or a little more, and then a short Q&A. We're trying something a little different here with Tom. He's going to talk for, I don't know, 15 minutes or so, and then we're going to have a moderated question period of about 45 minutes, and then we'll be open for open discussion. So I think it's going to be a really great format to get everybody's voice heard and everybody participating. So I'm pretty excited.
That does sound like a great format. I was talking to you a little bit about how I was saying I saw some of your work that is designed for like brainstorming or people who are creative inspiration. And how do you go about? What's your criteria for that kind of building? You know.
Oh, that's an interesting question. We tend to get hired by people that you've just described, people that are actively interested in participating in the design process. They have a very strong voice, generally. They could be movie directors, they could be movie stars, they could be founders of companies, they could be artists, they could be the type of personality that's wanting to and sort of willing to explore ideas and be somewhat aggressive in sort of a risk-taking way. We're just super lucky to be hired by people and clients like that. The size of the project is, frankly, for the office, is uninteresting to us. It could be a small project, as much as a construction budget of $100,000 to a very large project. The size is immaterial in some ways. What we're really interested in is the client and in how that client interacts with us. So to your point, we really are kind of a brainstorming operation where we are mm-hmm. actively always participating with the client in the design of their project, whatever it is.
Do the clients, like those types that like to give a lot of input, do they have a lot of input about, like, they they tell you something that just almost sounds like nonsense at first, so then you have to translate what their big idea is into architecture.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it may not be nonsense, you know, it's like intriguing to us. They may say something that they don't know what those architectural results or implications might be. And so our position has always been sort of understand the client, understand the context of the place, and then make architecture out of it. You know, our best clients are the ones that come in with those crazy ideas, those intriguing ideas, and then frankly trust us as architects, as professionals, to make something interesting out of that crazy, crazy idea.
Cool. Is this your first time in Alaska?
No, I've been up here a number of times. The first time I came up here was in 1978 to climb Mount McKinley, which was successful. And then in 83 and 84, I lived in Anchorage, Alaska, and owned a small architectural firm. Lived in Bootlegger's Cove, right below the city. And so I've been coming up here on and off over the years to visit friends and do projects.
Is there any architecture that you see that you find interesting or that you like just coming here over the years? Or that?
Well, yes. There's an architecture that has to deal with sort of extreme conditions, which I find as an architect that's interested in both the design side and the technical side, I really find the issues of extreme climate conditions to be interesting, and the implications of those extreme conditions and how to deal with them. So I find that issue frankly fascinating, and it happens from all the way down here in the southeast up obviously to the slope. You've got virtually every kind of condition in this state.
It's about as extreme as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like about architecture? Why did you choose to be an architect?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'll talk about it a little bit tonight. My dad's an architect, so when I left home, I actually didn't want to be an architect. It was the last thing in the world I thought I'd end up doing. I was actually more interested in sort of the hard sciences and the physics of nature. So I was actually interested in physics, geophysics in particular. But pretty quickly, when I was at the University of Washington, I began to sort of understand that I was missing something that was really important in my life, which was sort of this poetic side. You know, I enjoyed the hard sciences, I enjoyed the engineering, I enjoyed the sort of understanding of quantitatively, you know, the science of science. But I was missing something about the sort of the poetry side of life. Mm-hmm. And architecture, despite all its difficulties, is one of the few professions, I think, out there that really engages both. In fact, one architect is quoted as saying, and I think this is a terrific quote, is that successful architecture is the successful integration of poetry and rational.
Wow, that's a beautiful idea, the scientific and the artistic. It does. I could see how it overlap like that. Well, it's all happening. You can learn more about how those two areas of the world interlap in Tom's world at the lecture tonight at 6 p.m. at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. Tom and Evelyn, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Honor for Perseverance Theater to present the world premiere of my new play, The Road Weeps, The Well Runs Dry. This is a story that is close to my heart. It's a story of family, of history, of love, of tradition, of community, and the power of knowing that without each other, we can't move forward. I'm proud this story is coming to Juno.
Now playing through May 26th. More information can be found at perseverancetheater.org, Hearthside Books, or by calling 463-TIXS.
Years ago, my life changed. Divorce, I lost my job, and then I was diagnosed with a mental illness. Today I offer peer support, working full-time, helping others experiencing mental illness find jobs and security. Getting the right services and supports and having help from others in my situation helped in my recovery. Finding the right treatment made all the difference. Take the first step. Call 211.
This message brought to you by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Edmund Wilson, the American man of letters, born Red Bank, New Jersey, 1895, did not like to be called a critic, thought of himself as a journalist, reviewed books for The New Yorker, The New York Review of Books, and elsewhere, never taught at a university. He hated academics and their obsessive close readings of books. Edmund Wilson, who wrote important essays on Dickens, Kipling, Pushkin, Flaubert, and many other authors, changed public perceptions of their work. And a man of strong opinions, he did not pretend to be interested in things he was not interested in. He wrote in The New Yorker in 1965, "I have been bored by Hispanophiles, and I have also been bored by everything, with the exception of Spanish painting, that I have ever known about Spain. I have made a point of learning no Spanish, and I have never got through Don Quixote." It's the birthday of the poet Gary Snyder, born San Francisco, 1930, grew up in the woods of Washington and Oregon. He's associated with the Beat Generation. He certainly knew them. He liked them. Jack Kerouac, who based one of his characters in Dharma Bums on Gary Snyder. Most of the Beats were city people, and they admired Gary Snyder because he grew up in the woods and he was interested in nature. He knew about it. He'd worked as a logger and a seaman and a fire lookout. He was a student of anthropology, Asian culture, a Zen Buddhist. In 1956, he began his epic myth poem, Mountains and Rivers Without End, attempting the literary equivalent of a Chinese or Japanese scroll painting. He thought it would take him a couple of years. It took him 40 years. It's the birthday of the novelist Thomas Pynchon, born in Glen Cove, New York, 1937. Studied engineering physics at Cornell for 2 years, was in the Navy, went back to Cornell, studied English. Went to work as a technical writer for Boeing in Seattle, and it was there that he began his first novel, V. Most celebrated work was Gravity's Rainbow. And it's the birthday of Andrew Svensson, born Belleville, New Jersey, 1910, who went to work for the Stratemeyer Syndicate, which wrote the Hardy Boys series and Nancy Drew. Andrew Svensson, under a number of pen names, wrote Bobbsey Twins, Hardy Boys, Tom Swift, other books in many children's adventure series. Here's a poem for today by Nick Norwood entitled Jarring Honey. Decanting from bucket to pot, jug to jar, air bubbles suspend themselves in galaxies, sucrose solar systems, each glinting orb a perfect pearl reflecting light. The little giants are first to rise, stately as moons toward the surface. They catch and form a necklace at the throat, or continue upward, quickening in that last few millimeters to bob in silence on the top, collect in planetary clusters, molecular models, supernovas erupting in their own sweet time. Later, a day or more, even the tiniest have risen. Some will remain like distant nebulas, faint, milty pockets of deep space, abuzz with stars, humming with some new kind of being. A poem by Nick Norwood, Jarring Honey, from his collection Gravel and Hawk, published by Ohio University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And we're back on a Juno afternoon here on KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. I'm here with my next guests, members of the Jasper String Quartet, two of the members, and Jesselyn from Juneau Jazz and Classics is also here. And could you all introduce yourselves, starting from here?
Sure. Well, hi, Danny. Thanks for having us on.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
It. I'm Jesselyn Rintla. I work with Juneau Jazz and Classics, and we are in the midst of our 27th annual festival. So with me here, as you said, are two members of the Jasper String Quartet who will be performing tomorrow evening. So hopefully they'll talk a little bit about what they've been doing in Juneau and what's coming up tomorrow.
Yes, we're very excited to be back. We've actually been here 2 and 3 years ago, and we missed a year, which we really are happy to get to return. I'm Sam Quintel. I'm the violist of the Jasper String Quartet.
And I'm Jay Frivogel, the first violinist.
Excellent. So what kind of stuff had you been doing in town before tomorrow's concert?
Well, we've spent the last couple of days playing a bunch of concerts in schools. We got to play in four elementary schools. They're doing a bunch of music programs with kindergartners and first graders, and so that was really awesome.
I believe it's known as Jam.
And Jam.
It's really inspiring.
Really, really great stuff happening there. And so that was fun to hear them play and get to play for the little kids.
And then on Sunday, we were playing at the Shrine with Paul Rosenthal. So tomorrow night, we will be joined by Paul and Evan. And we're really looking forward to playing Haydn, Webern, and Brahms.
Excellent. And it's called Brahms Away.
That it is. And it's an all-Viennese program, so it should be a lot of fun.
Okay. Excellent. And how all do you know each other? How do you all know each other in the quartet?
Well, we actually formed the quartet a number of years ago at Oberlin Conservatory, and we did student chamber music together, and then we decided that we wanted to be more serious, so we applied for graduate schools, and we ended up doing 4 years of graduate work together, and for the past 3 years we've been out on our own as a professional string quartet. So we travel together, we eat together, we play lots of concerts together, we practice together a lot, and
We play about 85 or 90 concerts or 100 concerts, depending on how you count, a year. And we've been together since 2007, and it's our full-time job. So we rehearse 6 or 7 days a week and 4 or 5 hours a day. So it's what we do full-time, and we're like one big or little family, however you look at it.
that's pretty cool. You all were friends and... you're all from different places around the United States, is that right?
Originally, yeah. Sam, actually, sitting right next to me here, is from Fairbanks, Alaska, so it's great to be able to, for him to come back to his home state. I'm originally from St. Louis, and Sai is from Japan, and Rachel is from Ann Arbor, Michigan, but we all live together on the East Coast. The last place we did our schooling was at Yale University with the Tokyo Quartet. We studied with them intensely for 2 years, which was incredible. And we've lived in New Haven since then. We're actually about to move to Philadelphia, which is exciting.
That's really cool. So you've gotten to travel quite a bit with being in this quartet.
Yeah, one of the perks is definitely being able to come to beautiful places like Juneau.
Yeah.
Have you gotten to visit Fairbanks again since you're back in Alaska?
Actually, the last time we were in Juneau, we got to go up to Fairbanks to play a concert after this residency, but this year that didn't really work out. So
yeah, we have some other things on the East Coast we have to get back for, but hopefully we'll get there sometime.
Yeah.
I'm hoping in the winter sometime, actually.
Yeah. he thinks he hopes in the winter. He hasn't been there yet.
Do you all listen to different kind of music other than, like, string quartet music?
It really depends. It sort of depends on the mood I'm in. I think we listen... I listen to a lot of chamber music just because I am constantly trying to learn from, you know, for instance, we're playing the Brahms Sextet tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And so I've been scouring, you know, iTunes and YouTube, and there's this great recording that somebody just recorded off of an LP and put up of the Cleveland Quartet with some great players. And so I've been listening to that a lot. But I also really like jazz and I don't know, listening to different NPR stories too, and Rachel's a big fan of the top 40. Yeah. I don't know if you have other stuff.
I think all of us are just big fans of music in general, and we sometimes, you know, the chamber music thing, if it gets a little much, we like to spread out, but we also really enjoy what we do, so we love listening to quartets and chamber music.
And sometimes silence is the best thing.
That's also nice.
How about you, Jocelyn? You're a musician as well, right?
I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for the talented people who do make music. I am not one of them. The appreciation is all the greater. And I'm just going to sneak in here a note about tomorrow's Brahms Away that we have sold out, but I hope we have tickets at the door. So that will be at Holy Trinity Church. If you come around 7 o'clock, the concert starts at 7:30. And if you'd like any more information about that or some of the other amazing events in this 27th annual festival, it's jazzandclassics.org.
Oh, okay. So they're sold out, but go to the door.
Go to the door, and we will squeeze you in if we possibly can. We don't want you to miss this last opportunity to see the Jasper.
Yeah, we'd love to see you there.
Okay. Have you all rehearsed over there at the church? Like, have you been in there?
We've played there. We played there a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll be in there tomorrow. We'll be rehearsing in there tomorrow. But we had a rehearsal just before we came here, and when we leave, we're going to a rehearsal. So we've been rehearsing. That is definitely
practicing hard.
I was wondering what you thought about the church itself. Like, do you like playing in there? Is it like good acoustics or whatever? You know.
As far as I remember, it's a beautiful space, and I remember really enjoying our concert there. Like,
yeah, and every concert venue presents its own sort of wonderful aspects and its own challenges. So we'll deal with that tomorrow. And also, everything always changes when you have people in it as opposed to when it's an empty space. So, we'll look forward to sort of working with the hall tomorrow.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Do you have any good advice for young musicians out there? Want to dish out?
Practice.
Practice.
No, I think the thing that we've found is that if we're really inspired by something and we're really passionate about something, you'll find a way to make that happen. So for us, we were really passionate about playing in a string quartet and the four of us really playing together. And it's a lot of work. It's very tiring, but there are a lot of rewards at the end if you really stick with it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like, good just life advice. Jay, Sam, Jocelyn, thank you so much for coming in. And
thanks a lot.
The concert's tomorrow, 7:30 p.m., Holy Trinity Church. That's Thursday. It's sold out, but Jocelyn says you can buy tickets at the door and show up.
Looking
see what
forward
happens.
To seeing you there.
All right.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you. That's music from the Jasper Quartet, the folks we just talked to. They're playing some Beethoven on that track. And I'm here with my next guest, and she is with the March of Dimes, March for Babies event, and her name's Gina White. Gina, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me here.
So what is March of Dimes, for people who might not know?
Well, March Dimes is a foundation that was organized to research how to prevent prematurity, birth defects, and infant mortality.
Oh, okay. And when is the event happening?
Our annual event is this Saturday at the Diamond Field House. Now, registration starts about 9 a.m., and our walk is going to start at 10.
Okay. And is there a website for people to register?
So you can go to www.marchforbabies.org. There's also a Facebook site, Juno March for Babies, if you want to check it out there. And if you have any questions, you can give me a call at 586-1650.
Okay. And could you tell us a little bit about the history of March of Dimes?
So I found out some really neat history about March of Dimes. So I have a little question for you. So look right here. So do you know which president is on the U.S. dime?
That is Franklin D. Roosevelt?
That's correct, yeah.
Excellent.
So Franklin D. Roosevelt is on the dime. And let me just tell you a little story. So Franklin D. Roosevelt contracted polio and lost the use of his legs when he was about 39.
Uh-huh.
And he started this foundation called the National Foundation of Infantile Paralysis. And so during the Depression, this was back in the Great Depression, the polio epidemic really worsened and the fundraising was really hard. So they had their first ever radio appeal to the public for a fundraiser. And this was 75 years ago this year. And
wow.
This was basically 1 week before Roosevelt's birthday. And so they hired this entertainer called Eddie Cantor. And Eddie was on the air, and he jokingly said, "Hey, everybody, you should send a dime to the White House." Now, a dime was a lot of money back then. This was the Depression. So he said, "You should send a dime to the White House." And 1 week later, 2,680,000 dimes arrived at the White House. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
And so $268,000, and it was given to Jonas Salk, And they were wanting him to come, they gave him the money to develop, work and develop the polio vaccine.
Oh, wow.
Right.
That's awesome. That's
right.
Awesome. So how did you get involved with the...
Well, I'm not quite... I have a little bit more here to tell you. This is really cool. So Franklin D. Roosevelt was president 4 terms. So he was actually president for 16 years. It was pretty crazy. He's the only president ever to have 4 terms.
Uh-huh.
He died in 1945. And the citizens wrote to the Treasury Department requesting his picture on the coin. And the dime was chosen because of that radio show. They changed the name of that National Infantile Paralysis Foundation to the March of Dimes. And because he basically founded the March of Dimes, they put his picture on the dime. So, and then like in 19, about 10 years after he died, Jonas Salk had developed the polio vaccine, and it was offered to the public. And then a few years later, March of Dimes decided to change their mission to birth defect prevention and helping reduce infant mortality. And so their biggest mission right now is to have a 40-week pregnancy and the best healthy babies that you can have.
Mm-hmm.
I got involved with March of Dimes about 15 years ago when I was working for KeyBank here in Juneau. And KeyBank had a national day of volunteerism or something, I think, like that. And we got involved in the March for Babies about 15 years ago. And I've been involved for 15 years now. Every year, my family and I get together and walk. And I also have 2 preemie babies also. I had 1 child born at 34 weeks and another child born at 32 weeks. And I think they're listening on the phone. Hi, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so the March of Dimes Foundation is just a really great foundation, and we work hard here in Juneau to support our annual event.
So, just remind everyone how people can sign up for it again.
So, again, this is our annual event, and it's going to be at the Diamond Fieldhouse. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk 1 mile on the indoor track. And if the weather is like this, we're also going to walk outdoors, probably on the Brotherhood Trail.
Okay.
So registration is at 9 a.m. at the Diamond Fieldhouse. That's out there by Safeway and by the new pool.
Sure.
And so you come in, register, and you can walk with us. Now, here's the exciting part I want to tell you about.
Okay.
We're also organizing a huge bouncy house for the kids to play in.
Wow.
They also get to play in the soccer field. And we're going to have snow cones and cotton candy and popcorn, and it's just going to be a big, fun event.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Unfortunately, we're out of time today. Gina, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me today.
Thank you.
Juneau employers, do you want to decrease employee turnover, lower health care costs, and improve your bottom line? Creating a family-friendly work environment makes it easy for new mothers to come back to work. A support program can be simple and can benefit your business as well as your employees. Contact a workplace breastfeeding consultant today for a free consultation at 500-8871 or JunoBreastfeedingAlliance.org. Sponsored by Juno Family Health and Birth Center and Search.
Hi, we're back on a Juno afternoon. This is KTOO-FM in Juno. Hi, I'm with my guest here, Mark Piotrowski?
Yeah, Piotrowski, correct.
Piotrowski. Thank you so much for coming on today. And could you tell us a little bit about what the letter carrier food drive is all about?
This is our 21st year doing it nationwide, that all the letter carriers get together and with the cooperation with the Postal Service, mm-hmm. to do help feed the communities in their area. You know, they collect food from donations of people put in their mailbox, a can of soup or something in their mailbox, or a bag of groceries on the side of the mailbox. Just put the flag up, and we'll collect it and take it to the local food banks.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Well, listeners might not be able to tell, but I can tell that you are a postman. You have the uniform, and so I can trust it on good authority of what you're saying, that if I put food in my mailbox, you'll come by and pick it up.
Yes, we do deliver on Saturday still, and we will pick up on Saturday.
Fantastic.
A lot of people keep on asking me that.
How long has this event been going on?
Well, I've been the food coordinator for since 2007.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we've been doing it every year. And every year we're getting a little bit more food, and people are getting to know that it's always the second Saturday in May. Second Saturday in May, we will continue to do it. as long as we're still delivering on Saturday.
Wow, that's a really nice thing. There's a reason to keep the post office open on Saturday, eh?
Right. It helps feed the food goes to our local communities, so everybody across the United States and every city will be collecting food at from the communities and giving it to the local food banks.
That's really cool. So just like the food bank right here in Juneau.
Right. It's going to go to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, as well as we split it between them and also the Helping Hands Food Bank.
Oh, that's great work.
Now, if you don't have a mailbox you want to donate, you can donate by just taking your food to any post office, or you could take it to any grocery store at the IGA, Super Bear, Safeway, Fred Meyer's, Walmart, and just drop it in. There's hampers provided in all the stores. Just drop it in one of those hampers there, and we'll be collecting it. They're in there now until Saturday afternoon.
No kidding. That's super convenient.
Yeah. So if you're going to shopping and you see a sale, buy one, get one free, throw the free one in there on your way out the door.
Is there a number that people can call if they're interested in more information?
They can call me on 957-6057.
Okay.
That's 957-6057.
Well, thank you very much. And how much food has been?
Well, last year we
collected
almost 6,000. We've had a little over 6,000 one year before.
6,000 pounds. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully this year we're kind of shooting for 7,000. That's what my goal is for this year. We have over 16,780 delivery points. That's the P.O. boxes and as well as street delivery. Now, if everybody just dropped one can of soup in each one of those places, just think of how much food we would collect.
It would be a lot.
It would be a lot, yes.
Well, that's coming up this Saturday. It's the Letter Carrier Food Drive. Put canned goods and
the canned goods, noodles, macaroni and cheese, anything that's non-perishable food items. Please don't put no glass in there because, of course, we're transporting it and glass does get broke. So any non-perishable food items, put it in your mailbox, or you could take it to the grocery stores or to your local post office.
Well, that's great. Mark, thank you so much for stopping by. And so that's happening tomorrow, put non-perishable foods in your mailbox.
No, that's happening Saturday.
I'm sorry, Saturday.
Saturday, May 11th.
Saturday, May 11th.
Yeah, and it has to be out before your mail carrier gets there for delivery. So if your mail carrier gets there earlier on Saturdays, try to have it out there. Or you could put it out there the night before, but remember, inside the boxes is the best. Outside the boxes, the Ravens do know we have that once a year.
Well, great. And put it in your mailbox. Put the flag up on May 11th, or drop it off at IGA or other stores, or at the post office, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And help us feed our local communities here in Juneau.
That's a great cause. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're just about out of time, but tune in for Juneau Afternoon tomorrow. Shona Strausser will host.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.